Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, from a 100-year-old film of Pope Leo XIII to Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, the Pontifical Council for Social Communications marks half a century of the founding of the Vatican Film Library. And as countries around the globe mark World AIDS Day this week, we hear from one priest who is spearheading the Church's fight against the pandemic in Vietnam. Back in 1895, the French brothers Auguste and Louis Lumière invented, patented and screened the first ever moving picture using the cinematograph, the earliest film camera and projector. Just 1 year later, in 1896, the same technology was used to film Pope Leo XIII in the Vatican Gardens, a short section of black and white footage showing the pontiff smiling at the camera and blessing those around him before being driven away in an elegant horse-drawn open carriage. Now you can see that and other clips of films showing popes throughout the 20th century, from Benedict XV to John Paul II, on the website of the Vatican's Council for Social Communications, or in a longer DVD produced by the Council to mark the 50th anniversary of the official founding of the Vatican Film Archive. Currently available in Italian only, the DVD is entitled Immagini del Concilio, or Images of the Council, and is largely dedicated to footage of the Second Vatican Council, announced by Pope John XXIII in 1959, the exact same year that the film library was founded.
Tutto il mondo è rappresentato. Si direbbe che persino la luna si è affrettata stasera. Osservatela in alto, a guardare a questo spettacolo.
As officials from the Council are keen to point out, the footage is a treasure of great significance, both for people who can recall those watershed years and for younger generations who have only heard or read about it on the pages of their history books.
I remember as a very young child, my grandmother making me watch a TV presentation on Irish TV from Rome, what I now realise was the end of the Second Vatican Council.
Monsignor Paul Tai is Undersecretary of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. He told me more about the history of the film library and these 50th anniversary celebrations.
Well, the film archives were established officially in 1959, the idea being to bring together the various films that existed in the Vatican. Some of them were material that had been made here, early images of popes, starting with 1896, the Lumière brothers filming the then pope, then Leo XIII. Then we've had other images where films were made on site. And over the years, various material had accumulated. That material, as I understand, was beginning to deteriorate in various ways. So the decision was made to have a formal archive where the material could be conserved and then shared as appropriate with various agencies. Also in that context, then began to realise that cinema was becoming ever more popular, that it would also be worthwhile gathering and having a collection of film from outside the Vatican, but film that picked up on various important human, social, spiritual themes, and that could also be seen to represent maybe a way of dialoguing with the world through the medium of cinema.
So you've got over a century of priceless material here. Do you have any idea exactly how much in terms of reels?
I've no idea in terms of reels. I know that the kind of our projection, when you ask occasionally, how long is it going to take to digitalise it all? That's our project at the moment, trying to digitalise it. One feels that it's a job that'll be going on after my own time as well gone. So, no, seriously, it's an issue we're looking at is trying to look for some external assistance and support on doing this job. It has to be done with great sensitivity. The material is very fragile, a lot of it. A lot of the older material has already been digitalised and therefore is much more easily available. So, for example, on the Pontifical Council's website, the images of 1896 are there on the website, and already that attracts a lot of attention. Just the very, very early images. Then I must say, some of the images that I think are particularly strong are the images of the Second Vatican Council.
Cari figlioli, sento le vostre voci. La mia è una voce sola, ma riassume la voce del mondo intero.
Personally, that strikes me in a very strong way because I remember as a very young child, my grandmother making me watch a TV presentation on Irish TV from Rome of what I now realise was the end of the Second Vatican Council. And the then RTE commentator was making this point. He said, and if you live to be 100, you'll never see an event like this again. And as a seven-year-old, that struck me very strongly. I don't think I envisaged living to 100, but somehow now that I see those same images, it's extraordinary, the event and the continuity, and that people today can share that, what is for some of us maybe a memory, but for others is actually something they can't even remember. And there's some, but it gives them a sense of the vitality of that occasion.
That's why you've put together a commemorative DVD, haven't you? Tell us a bit about the origins of this.
The idea was we wanted to celebrate the 50th anniversary, and there are very many classical ways of celebrating a 50th anniversary, with a big ceremony, with an academic conference, with a publication. But we said, let's do it in a way that's appropriate to the medium we're talking about. So they developed an idea of commissioning a film, a short film that uses a lot of the material and also talks a little bit of explaining the rationale. And we've been very lucky. We've come out with what I think is a very attractive one-hour DVD that is a celebration and that has been sent around to people instead of having the traditional academic conference. And it speaks, I suppose, the language that we should be speaking, which is the language of images, and speaks it very powerfully.
It's got some of these very old clips on it, hasn't it, of the popes well before the council, but it also largely focuses on the council and the importance, the significance of that today.
Yeah. There is the historical material there, and then there's the focus, the core of the collection would be, I think it's over about 200 hours of film from the Second Vatican Council, including things that maybe we discovered a bit selfishly ourselves first. It's very interesting. We found the actual ceremony for the promulgation of Inter Mirifica, which is the document that in some ways is the inspiration for our own council. So I think that led us to think about the whole significance of the council and having it there. Most people will know the Vatican documents, have read those documents, but to see the people who generated it, to see it the way in which it was done, makes it come alive and see it as something very real, not just a kind of theological moment, but a very real moment in the life of the church. Yeah.
Several hundred hours of material. It must have been an almost impossible task selecting 1 hour.
I think some of the major occasions suggested themselves. Focus on the beginning, focus on the end, probably a little selfishly, a little focus on the materials that talks about our own existence. And then some of the selection material was on the basis of recognising people and people who are still large figures, of finding elements of that. But we entrusted this very much to the director of the film to find the best images, and we guided the historical context. I think what is nice in that is it captures also a lot of the contemporary coverage of the council. So you see the journalists, you see the reporting, you see it happening, you realise that this was an event that had its own intrinsic significance, but also maybe launched a new way of the church dealing with media and being confronted with media.
Mentre Sua Santità sale i gradini del Duomo, è una sola ovazione.
This is a DVD in Italian, but it is going to be translated, isn't it, into other languages?
Yeah, I mean, for the moment it's in Italian. The hope would be to bring it into other languages, obviously English, Spanish, French, to reach the larger numbers of people belonging to our tradition. And the hope is to do that over the next while.
You mentioned earlier that the archives also contain films about the life of the church around the world or other important cultural and historical documents.
Yeah, I'd say what has happened a little bit on that angle, it's very hard to be absolutely systematic in how you gather material. So I think it's probably not unfair to say that the collection is a little bit eclectic. It reflects the interests of people, but some materials have been sent in to us from different parts of the world. Sometimes if you have filmmakers working here in Rome, and that we've accredited them, then at the end they send us some of their work and material that reflect that. Sometimes we have maybe films of particular cultural value or recognised obvious worth that are sent to us. I'm not sure there's any particular criteria for selecting them. But the interesting issue is that we have this very strong resource personally, I've been fine to indulge it. You know, you certainly remember, I saw a film about 25 years ago. I remember there was one that had struck me very strongly 25 years ago, La Messe Finita di Nanni Moretti, which obviously in the English-speaking world was hard. Found it here.
Amongst those documents, you've also got some incredibly historical material, haven't you?
Yeah.
Dating back, again, almost a century.
We have, I think, some of the materials we have. One is a film of the life of St. Francis, made in 1911, I think. And it's a very interesting film because it's obviously, it's more like a pageant filmed. There's no sound. It's black and white. It's very manneristic. It's almost, as our president has said, it's almost like a ballet. But it shows an effort in the Vatican Gardens to produce a film touching already on an historically important figure like St. Francis. And as we know then, subsequently, there's been the great tradition of the films of St. Francis, from Brother Sun, Sister Moon of Zeffirelli, to the great work of Liliane Caviani, and more recent presentations that show how the figure, and it's interesting to see how different times, different aspects of the figure have appealed. We also have a very interesting documentary, interesting for what it's talking about, but interesting for the style in which it's made, from late 1940s, about, I suppose it's really focusing on the figure of Pius XII, Pastor Angelicus. It's extraordinary, a strong video images of the Vatican and the life of the Vatican, with beautiful high production values that make it a very interesting film as well.
It's well known that you organise showings, private showings, for the cardinals and other Vatican officials.
Yep.
Can you tell us how often that takes place and how do you decide what to show?
Certainly, since I've been working here for about 2 years now, and I think the criteria are very often various people suggest projects to us and they would like us to make them available as presentations. One of the things that I've seen since I've been here, that the ones that certainly have got attention have been, there have been a number of recent biographies, film biographies of popes, and they're obvious figures and they can be shown. Sometimes you get somebody comes along and offers a very important film and says, look, this is one that I think would be of interest. We use our own judgment as to whether there would be the interest and whether the film is the appropriate one. The one I know that it's before my own time, but a lot of attention was given to, was Robert Benigni's film Life is Beautiful. It was certainly one that was presented in front of the then Pope, John Paul II, and which I think captured a lot, that this film was one that appealed and was used. But I think in more recent times, sometimes there are obvious ones of founders of religious orders, people of direct interest to the daily life of the church, and that has tended to be in the last 2 years the type of events that have happened.
On October the 29th, 2009, Pope Benedict XVI met with members of the Council for Social Communications, underlining the importance of this film library founded by Blessed John the 23rd.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, quest'anno ricorre il 50° anniversario della fondazione della Filmoteca Vaticana, voluto dal mio venerato predecessore, Beato Giovanni XXIII.
Describing the collection as a rich cultural patrimony for the whole of humanity, the Pope encouraged the Council to continue this work of documenting the progress of Christianity through such images, so that this heritage may be preserved for future generations.
La Vaticana possiede pertanto un ricco patrimonio culturale che appartiene all'intera umanità.
Pope Benedict XVI there speaking to members of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. And earlier you heard Monsignor Paul Tai, Undersecretary of the Council, speaking about the 50th anniversary of the Vatican Film Library. And for further details or a preview of some of the footage contained in the DVD, you can see the Council's website, www.pccs.va. Starting over 20 years ago, World AIDS Day has been marked annually on December the 1st, a chance to increase awareness about the disease, to fight prejudice and to raise money to support all those working on the front line with patients and their families, or orphans and their communities. This year, the theme for World AIDS Day was Universal Access and Human Rights, an important reminder that HIV has not gone away, though it is increasingly slipping down the political agenda, and that there are still far too many people unable to access life-saving antiretroviral drugs. The latest figures from UNAIDS show that some 2 million people died of AIDS-related causes last year alone, while over 33 million are now living with the HIV virus.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, il primo dicembre ricorre la giornata mondiale contro l'AIDS.
Speaking at his Angelus address on Sunday, Pope Benedict remembered in his thoughts and prayers all those affected by HIV/AIDS, especially the children, the poor, and those who are rejected because of their disease.
La Chiesa non cessa di prodigarsi per combattere l'AIDS attraverso le sue istituzioni.
Pope Benedict said the Church does not cease to combat AIDS, caring for the sick through dedicated institutions and personnel. He urged all people to make their own contribution to the fight against the pandemic through prayer and other practical forms of care.
We open shelters, we open home to welcome them, and also we talk about HIV/AIDS in the church, and also using the gospel message to tell to the people, especially in our parish, that these are the people who need the care.
Vietnamese Father John Tuai is a doctor who has been in the forefront of the church's effort to combat AIDS since 2004, when he started working with HIV-positive people, setting up the Tam Mai Centre for those with no one else to care for them. I caught up with him recently here in Rome to find out more about his work and how he first became involved in this kind of ministry to the sick and suffering.
I'm a Camillian priest, Order of St. Camillus. I was a physician assistant as well before I became priest. And when I came back to Vietnam after my priesthood training in the Philippines, the Cardinal John Baptist Phạm Minh Mẫn, Archbishop of Ho Chi Minh City, he requests our congregation to allow myself to work under him to provide pastoral care and treatment for people living with HIV and AIDS in Vietnam, and to coordinate with other religious congregation to provide care and treatment for dying people with AIDS, especially the abandoned people because of HIV/AIDS. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the situation there in Vietnam. We hear so much about AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa particularly. Yeah. We don't hear so much about the situation there in your country.
AIDS situation in Vietnam is very bad as well, because mainly because of drug use, but also because of stigma and discrimination toward people living with HIV and AIDS, as well as the women and children. Usually they are the group of the people that are being neglected, and they were being blamed for because of HIV AIDS. People usually look at women with HIV as sex workers, although they are just a housewife, because of wrong information in the past. And so when the HIV situation was very bad in 2005 alone, it was about more than 200,000 people affected by HIV, more than 0.5%, and it was very bad at that time. And also because of stigma and discrimination toward HIV people, so many people living with HIV/AIDS were rejected, abandoned, homeless. And there were lack of treatment at that time. Even until now, not many people can avail of the HIV treatment. Only one-third of the people need HIV treatment can access to that. Yeah.
What is the attitude of the government? You're obviously working very hard to try and change these attitudes. How able are you to cooperate with the government on this issue?
Actually, it was in 2004 that the government realized that they couldn't do much about HIV/AIDS. That's why they sent a request, official request to the cardinal, to the church, that could you help us on this. Before that, the church was not allowed to enter into to social work and to healthcare field. But HIV seemed to be the only door that the church were able to involve at that time when the government sent an official request. And we have to coordinate to train religious and caregiver to provide care for HIV people being put in the kind of education camp for drug users, and that place, nobody go there to care for them. So we start the care and treatment there first for dying AIDS people. And since 1990 until 2004-2005, the message from the public and the government to about HIV was that they are social evil, and they are part of sex workers and drug user people. So that's why it create a perception about stigma and discrimination toward HIV/AIDS people. And then only after 2005, and then the government changed the message, say that they are just patients and we should care for them. But it was too late. So it was very difficult to change the mindset of the people have been brainwashed before.
And so how are you trying to work to try and change attitudes, to try and help people realize that AIDS patients are simply those most in need of care and support?
So we begin by provide care for them. We open shelters. We open home to welcome them. And also we talk about HIV/AIDS in the church and try to convince and try to communicate to the people about their misunderstanding. And also using the gospel message to tell to the people, especially in our parish, that these are the people who need care for. And they bear the image of Jesus, because Jesus tried to, in his gospel message, tell us that it is when we work with the suffering people, we care for them, that we care for him. So it starts to change them slowly. And we begin in our parish, and then the different parish. We do advocacy, and then we do training, awareness raising. And then the cardinal also invite Monsignor Vitillo to train his priests. And then when we were able to do it in our diocese, in the diocese of Ho Chi Minh City, we start to spread to different dioceses. And the message start to change slowly. But people just rely more on the church, even with the people who are not Catholic. They go over to the church and ask for care and treatment.
Catholics, Christians, of course, are quite a small minority, aren't they? Are you working with other faith leaders on this issue?
We work too. On the feast of Our Lady of Lourdes in 2005, it was the first time that the Diocese of Ho Chi Minh City, through the Cardinal Pham Minh Mẫn, he invited all the different religious leaders to talk about HIV/AIDS and to have inter-religious prayers and dialogue to pray for people with HIV/AIDS. And at that time, around 15,000 people came. And today, we are known, you know, the Catholic Church, although only 10%, 7 to 10% of population are known, the people who are leading in the care and treatment for HIV people.
House of Hope, don't you, it's called, particularly for those who are dying of AIDS. Tell us about the work that goes on there.
I found Mai Tam Center. It can be understood as House of Hope, because Mai is tomorrow and Tam is heart of a Vietnamese name, but it can be understood as the heart of Mary as well, because the Vietnamese people, they call Mary as Mai. Mai Tam is the heart of Mary. So we understood in the religious message that it's a place where women and children who have been neglected, and especially abandoned children with HIV/AIDS, can find a place for sheltering, can access treatment and care, and can begin with their new life again. Yeah, many of them have been abandoned, have been rejected. So when we open that house, we hope that they can find, reawaken their hope and faith in life. So in that center, we began with only seven children in 2005. And four women, but today we are sheltering 22 women and 69 children. And aside from that, we help 300 children in the community with HIV, so that they can have a support, and also we can help them to get into treatment and to education. Yeah.
The treatment for pregnant women is one of the most important ways of preventing other children contracting the HIV virus. How much is this available in Vietnam today?
It was not available before. It was mainly available in the main hospital. So the only way we could do is we try to help the women in the rural area to come to the city and to get checked up and to receive treatment. Because they were very poor, that's why we opened the shelter, so that while they are pregnant, they can access to treatment when they stay with us. If they stay at home, they couldn't access to this because nobody teach them, nobody help them to understand. So usually when their husband die, they either, if they go to the health clinic in the city or in their place, they will be advised to abort. So we have a network of people like counselors to give option to them before they choose abortion. So we help them to aware that they will not pass. They may have a good chance not to pass HIV to their children if they receive treatment. It's not very widely available until now. It's only in main cities that the program of prevention of mother to child treatment is established. But now the government is trying to make it more available, but not very much in awareness of women, pregnant women. Yeah.
Thanks there to Father John To Ai, head of the Ho Chi Minh City Archdiocesan Committee on HIV/AIDS and founder of the Mai Tam Centre for Women and Children Living with HIV. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again, if you can, at the same time tomorrow. Or find all our news and feature programmes on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.